Yeah. Good. So I promised to give a review of the state operator map that you've already seen in conformal field theory. I mentioned in the last lecture that the basic idea of the state operator map is this sort of transformation which maps the complex Z-plane into the cylinder. Sending the origin to the past. So the basic statement of the state operator map is that there exists a state you can put in the past, so the correlation functions on the cylinder will be the same as correlation functions on the plane. Or if you prefer to think in terms of a sphere, that there are states you can put in the past and in the future, so the correlation functions on the cylinder will be the same as correlation functions on the sphere. Now, which property should this state have? Well, suppose I don't want to put anything here. I want this point to be just any other point of the plane. Well, then one of the simplest ways to ensure that is the case is to make sure that this picture is translation invariant. So if I put, if I can make, so there is a, in a quantum field theory, there is only, in a reasonable quantum field theory, there is only one translation invariant local operator, which is the identity, the constant. So if I want to mimic putting nothing here, I should put a state here, which is translation, which maps to something translation invariant. Translations are generated. So translations on the plane are generated by L minus 1 on the cylinder and L minus 1 bar. Let's check. The translation is D over the Z. This is D over the S times DS over the Z. So e to the minus s. And so this means that this is precisely L minus 1. I hope I'm getting my signs right. Now, so we're looking for states which are annihilated by L1, L minus 1, L minus 1 bar. Also, if you want, we don't just want translations. We want things to be invariant under all, how can I say this? If I put a stress tensor here and I bring it to the origin, I don't expect to see any divergence, right? So I expect that T of Z goes to a contour that does not diverge. As Z goes to zero. Now, if you, you can, if you look at the expansion and the definition of the modes of the stress tensor, I just want to make sure if I have e to the s ns, so e to the minus ns. Just a sec. Yes. Okay. So it's easy to convince yourself that I should also have more generally that ln on 0 vanishes for all n's that are greater or equal to 0. And including this, minus 1. Essentially, these statements are just that this correlation function should not change if I take this neighborhood and I move it around. Without blowing it up completely. So these correspond to all vector fields which sort of behave well near the origin, don't diverge near the origin. So for all the vector fields that don't diverge near the origin, acting this vector field on nothing would just give me the same thing. So the statement is that the identity operator will map to this vacuum, which satisfies these properties. Now, in the theory of the free boson, for example, we're looking for a primary whose dimension is 0 and which is killed by L minus 1. And it's not difficult to check that the only guy is just the ground state with 0 momentum. Remember that, for example, L minus 1 on a state with momentum gave you P A minus 1 P. So you see that.
The identity be the only choice that satisfies
the. Well, let's put it like that. Whatever satisfies these choices has the property that moving it around does not change correlation functions. So in a unitary theory, you can prove easily that there can only be the identity. In non-unitary theories, things can be funnier. In principle, for example, there exist non-unitary topological field theories, which have interesting local operators, which have dimension 0, which can be moved around freely and still are non-trivial. But in a unitary theory, quantum field theory, the only situation where something like this can happen is you have actually something which is secretly multiple theories. So, I'm really going out of a tangent here, but suppose that you have a system which has a Hilbert space, which is a sum, direct sum of two completely different Hilbert spaces, Hilbert space of theory 1 plus Hilbert space of theory 2. For example, this could be a system with two vacua. One vacuum has a set of local operators, another vacuum has another quantum field theory. Now, you could have an operator that says, I want to be in this vacuum, that projects you on this Hilbert space. This operator will be still something you can move around freely and behaves like the identity, but it's not the identity. So sometimes you can write the identity as a sum of projectors. This happens in your theory is just a direct sum of different theories which don't talk to each other. Okay, not product of theories, sum of theories. So product of theories means I have a theory of a scalar field, I have another theory of scalar fields, I take the product is a theory of two scalar fields. A sum of theories is I have a situation where correlation functions are just sums of two correlation functions of theory 1 and correlation functions of theory 2. Physically, a sum of theories happens, for example, when you have some system in the UV which have two different vacua. then the domain will between the Chuvakia, any process that interpolates between the Chuvakia usually costs some energy gap. If you look at energies much lower than that energy gap, you don't see any physical process that can transfer you from a vacuum to the other, and you get the direct sum of theories. So these things do happen, but not needed here. Okay, so so for a scalar, the vacuum is the zero momentum state with no oscillators. For the ghosts, well, this guy is not the vacuum. For example, it has a zero minus one, not zero. But you can argue that B minus one bar of G is the vacuum. We'll come back to this. But you can check, in principle, it satisfies all these properties. Now, there is a simple property that the vacuum always has that is that we might want to observe that follows from this. See, suppose I take some generic operator and I act on the vacuum. Now, because my Hilbert space does not have states of arbitrary negative energy, some mode, some sufficiently positive mode of this operator will kill the vacuum. It must be, because sooner or later I run out of states in my Hilbert space. But then I can do L minus 1 on ON of the vacuum. I can commute it across. So I get this equality. So, which is, so this is also zero. So this is also zero. Now this is proportional to On minus one acting on the vacuum, and so on and so forth. So unless the proportionality constant becomes zero at some point, you might worry that this, so this allows you to make, you know, ensure that a whole bunch of modes of this operator will kill the vacuum, just as a consequence of the fact that the vacuum is killed by L minus one. Now, in general, if O has dimension delta, this process stops at O minus delta. So O minus delta acting on the vacuum is non-zero. O of N minus delta acting on the vacuum is zero for N bigger than zero. So this coefficient vanishes only when you are hitting this step. Now, this is, again, very reasonable because if you look at the state operator map, if you remember from conformal theory, and perhaps I should recall it again, if an operator has dimensions, okay, in general, here, I should have been careful. So, in general, for a generic operator, which is possibly not holomorphic, here I meant an holomorphic operator. But so, for a general operator, coordinate transformations act. I hope I'm getting the sign right. Act as this. Okay. So this is the definition of a primary operator of dimensions delta and delta bar. Now, suppose I want to understand what is the image of this operator under the state operator map. Well, what I can do is the following. I can start by putting it away from zero. And I can apply my map, my conformal transformation to the cylinder. Now here I have the vacuum. And then I have this operator insertion at S, which was e to the z. And then I need to put ds over the z. Now here is where I probably gonna get the sign wrong, but then I think it's this. Okay. I think this is correct. Okay. Okay. So if I want to have my operator at zero, I can take the limit as z goes to zero of this expression. I can take the vacuum, act with the operator, renormalize it by this amount, and send S to minus infinity to the far past. Now, here I didn't have any divergence, so I shouldn't have any divergence here. So you see that O acting on the vacuum must create something which does not blow up in the past faster than this. For something that can be expanded in holomorphic coordinates, this is precisely this condition. So if you just apply this sort of definition, you're going to get all sorts of entries in our state operator map correspondence. Actually, let me get. So for the free boson, we get, so the identity goes to the vacuum. Del x goes to a minus 1 acting on the vacuum. Just because I'm expanding del x in currents, I'm picking up the coefficient of e to the s. I don't know, del x, which is the stress tensor, will map to a minus 2. Minus 1 squared on the vacuum, which is also the same as L minus 2 acting on the vacuum. And so on. Probably there is one. Yeah. I should put minus 1 half. Okay. And so on and so forth. So you just, if you look at the square x, that would make map to A minus 2 over the vacuum. And so on and so forth. So each oscillator corresponds to some derivative of x. You just take all the oscillators we find on the right-hand side, and you normal order them here to get some product of operators. OK. Now, this is nice, but something is missing. So what's missing from this table? Are there some states on the right-hand side that we have not described? Are these all the states for a chiral boson, for a free boson? Of course, there are anthropomorphic parts, but that's boring. Okay, that's boring. But something more dramatic is missing?
The
space really boosts. No, that's in Fritz Keller theory, what's missing here?
Aren't these just all descendants from the ground state, and do you not also have like other primary states which also have descendants?
Correct. We're missing the momentum states. So what corresponds to P? So no polynomial in X and its derivatives can ever correspond to this, because we put them all there. And this is funny, because usually when we do quantum field theory, we're used to only use the fields and polynomials in the fields and their derivatives to define local operators. So what's missing? How do we get P? Well, as a state, P can be obtained by acting with the zero mode of the scalar field on the vacuum, right? So if you want to get P, we need something which reduces to that as time goes to minus infinity. Now, the simplest thing we can try to do is to do this. After all, this contains little x. But we need to find a way to give us a precise meaning to this object. Is this a reasonable vertex operator? Now, if we were in dimension different from 2, this would be complete garbage, because this would have a precise scaling dimension. We would be, if I expand this in power series, I'm just adding up things of different scaling dimension. Meaningless. In 2 dimension, it can barely make sense, because this guy has dimension 0. Still, if you do something like algebraic quantum field theory, putting things that are not algebraic in there would probably annoy you. Anyway, so we need to find a way to define this and regularize it in some way. It must have some. And this has a chance, at least, to give us a candidate for what to put here. Notice that for this to work, this must have pretty weird properties, because if you remember, L0 of P was P squared over 2, which means that the corresponding operator must have a dimension P squared over 2. A scaling dimension P squared over 2. How do we get some fractional scaling dimension out of a theory of a free scalar? Right. If this is our candidate, how could this guy get a fractional scaling dimension? Right. Look at it. It's just exponential something of dimension 0. Right. So of course the derivative is in the regulator. So there are 2 ways we can. There are at least three ways we can try to define this operator. They're all 3 instructive. On the cylinder, I might be pragmatic. I might just say, okay, let's take the expression, think about it as literally an operator acting on my Hilbert space, and regularize it in the opposite way, which is normal ordering. Okay? So that's a reasonable choice. So you would define your e to the I px as the normal ordering of that expression, which looks like these. sorry, let me call this alpha because otherwise I'll get infinitely confused between the momentum eigenvalue and the momentum operator. So where x smaller and x bigger are the pieces of x which contain creation operators or destruction operators. Okay? So this is one possible definition. It's a fine definition. With this definition, when you act on the vacuum, this disappears. Then you send s to minus infinity. That disappears. This also disappears because you're acting on the vacuum. And you're left with e to the I alpha x. So with this definition, this is a reasonable vector operator to create the state P. So if I put that vector operator in this definition, I will get the state P. But this definition is very cylinder specific, right? It doesn't help you very much understanding what's going to happen under conformal transformations or what's going to happen under, how are we going to define this operator on a general manifold? Right. In a general manifold, there is no direct natural direction to use to split things. Still, it's somewhat instructive because of the following fact. So suppose I wanted to put things together into just one exponential. I wanted to compare this with a naive definition. Okay. If I do it just on this expression, I get horrid divergences. But let me regularize it for a moment, again, by sort of a point splitting procedure. So what I'm doing is, to enforce the normal ordering, something I can do is to just move this to the future of that. Right? If I move this, if S prime is to the future of S, then this is ordered in the proper way. Now, there is a nice normal ordering identity. For example, if you have A minus 1 and A1, which commute to 1, then you can ask what is e to the a1a plus ba minus 1. And you can convince yourself that this is the same as e to the 1 half ab, e to the a minus 1, e to the b a1. So this is just a nice identity about normal ordering. You encounter it, for example, in quantum mechanics, if you try to understand how e to the I x and e to the ip behave when you multiply them. You can prove it in various ways, including just expanding out. It's horrid. Slightly better way to look to check that it satisfies a nice differential equation to the derivative of the left-hand side and the right-hand side with respect of A, of capital A, and then integrate from A equal to 0 on. That's the most sane way to compute it. But so if you just apply this here to all the modes, including X and P, then you get something fun. You get e to the alpha squared over 2, sum for n greater than 0, 1 over n, e to the n s prime minus s, times the naive the thing where everything has been put in the same exponent. This adds up to a log. There is this, and there is a complex conjugate. Okay. Then this adds up to a log. There is also a term from P. So this gives you something like log of e to the s prime squared, to the p squared. I hope I got it right, because I think I forgot to write down the log, but I think this is roughly correct. So this kind of starts showing you where the funny anomalous dimension of this operator might come from. See, if I try to define this operator, one way would be to get the naive expression regulated with some point splitting, say.
Alpha squared over?
Yes, sorry.
No, also before the log?
Yes. My alphas and a's are indistinguishable. And you see that in, there was an e to the, okay. It was just one alpha squared, sorry. I wanted to write e to the alpha squared log, and then it just became this. So I missed a step. It was supposed to be e to the alpha squared over 2 log of e to the s minus s prime, e to the s prime squared. And then it becomes that. So you can see that when you do things with a sort of point splitting regularization, you're going to multiply everything by some prefactor which has an alpha squared there. And you can start imagining that if you try to do the same calculation in different coordinate systems, the infinite part of these prefactors might cancel out, leaving something finite, which is raised to the power alpha squared. Now, if you want to do things properly, still in a free field theory language, you could do the following. You could say, okay, I have my path integral. I want to add in the path integral e to the I px. Well, let's just add it to the exponent, right? So I can add several of these operators. Okay, I can take this as my definition of a correlation function with a bunch of these v. Now, if you do it like this, you're going to get some horrid divergence. Because the way you do these integrals, this is a quadratic expression. This is a linear expression in x. You would complete the squares. There will be something like inverse propagator. You would end up with something that is divergent. You can improve it a little bit by doing the following. Well, this is a function which integrates to one. And is zero outside some cutoff. So let's put steps in here. So something that goes to a delta function as epsilon goes to zero. So the bump function. Now this definition is now fine when you do the calculation. You get something like e to the, for example, on the plane. Sorry, I'm losing pieces. So you end up with things that look, I mean, sorry, on any manifold, you can do this calculation on any manifold. The answer is going to be e to the sum over a and b of the propagator from ZA to ZB times F epsilon of, sorry, we'll call it Z1 and Z2. Yes. Sorry, I meant this. So you get something like this. So this is just the infinite dimensional version of this integral, the integral over xi's of e to the xi aij fj plus bi plus bi xi. Is a Gaussian integral. It evaluates to e to the bi bj a inverse ij. It's something you get just by completing the squares. It's the basic Gaussian integral. If you apply it to here, the inverse of the kinetic term is the propagator by definition. So you get this, the integral of the propagator against the sources. Okay. Now, when you evaluate this integral, the propagator for a free scalar is log of z1 minus z2 squared. Probably there's a minus here and an extra minus there. Now, when a is different from b, I'm integrating this log against two bumps which are far away from each other. This gives me a finite answer. But when A is equal to B, I'm integrating over the region where Z1 goes close to Z2. So this is going to be divergent. So I need to strip off this divergence by hand, by adding something quadratic. If I do this, then what I get is going to have a good limit as epsilon goes to zero. So you can take this definition. It's a perfectly good computational definition. It gives you some very explicit answer, because once you subtract off this term, this is restricted to a different from b. And then this, you can take the limit as epsilon goes to zero smoothly. This becomes delta function. right? And so you end up with a nice answer, which is something like product over A different from B of ZA minus ZB to the PA, PB, something like that. I might get this, I might have the same wrong, I have it in a few pages. Just a second. Yes, this is correct. Okay. Now, but if you look at this definition, now suppose I do a change of coordinates, then my regulator will change. It will change by something like p square virtue log of z1 minus z2 squared over z1 prime minus z2 prime squared as z1 goes to z2. So this is just p square over 2 log of del z over del z prime squared. And so this is in the exponent, and so the result is that our vertex operator transforms just like that with dimension p squared over 2 and p squared over 2. A third way you can approach this problem, if you have familiarity with conformal field theory, or if you like to work with word identities, is to say, I don't have to define operators by the fields, as the polynomials of the fields. I can define operators as disorder operators by imposing some divergence in my path, in the elementary fields of the path integral. So you could say, I want to define my field, a local operator, just by requiring that dx approaching it has some divergence. This definition is already enough. It allows to compute all correlation functions without any problem, because the stress tensor is dx is minus 1/2 del x del x. So this is enough to figure out what is the OP of the stress tensor is this operator. The OP of the stress tensor with an operator contains the derivative of the operator. So this allows you to write down differential equations, essentially for your correlation functions, and then compute them. Okay, so one way or another, we can get to this answer. The story for the ghost to define a complete state operator map. And in terms of these operators, VP of Z. And then, of course, you can get all the descendants just by putting extra fields. For example, A minus 1 on P is going to be del X VP e to the I P of X, and so on and so forth. For the ghosts, you can also write a dictionary. So as I mentioned, the ground state does not go to the identity. The state 0 goes to the identity. C minus 1 on 0 will go to C. The ground state is C minus 1, C minus 1 bar of 0, and it will be mapped to C of Z. C bar of Z, first of all. And then so on and so forth. You can get a whole state operator map. We need also a tool to compute correlation functions. For the free scalar, we just use Gaussian integrals. to get answers like that. For the ghosts, the basic ingredient is just this statement. So for the scalar fields, so suppose we want to do calculations on the sphere. If you want to do a correlation function on a sphere of a bunch of operators, what you can do is to just map it to the cylinder. And do the calculation on the cylinder. That's, you know, the proof, foolproof way. If you do that with those vertex operators, you get this answer. For the ghost, you can do the same. For example, suppose you want to know what is suppose you want to know this correlation function on a sphere. So you just use, you go to the cylinder, you insert the same ghosts, and then you pick these terms in this big sum. You know, you expand every ghost into modes by saying C of S is sum of cn e to the minus ns. Okay? You expand it out, you pick these contributions, and you get an answer. In here, there are something like 36 terms that correspond to all possible ways to fish out SC1, SC bar 1, C0, C bar 0, C minus 1, C bar minus 1 inside this. This kind of had to be the answer because, when you pick up these terms in the ghost, you only pick up things that are let me not say anything. So this is the answer. Okay, it's reasonable because it's anti-symmetric under exchange of, say, holomorphic components of B. You know, these are ghosts, they're anti-fermions. So it's natural that there are factors like Z1 minus Z2 here, or Z1 bar minus Z2 bar, because CZ1 and CZ2 are fermions. So this had to be anti-symmetric under exchanging Z1 and Z2, or Z1 bar and Z2 bar, and so on. Another observation that I could make before I run away is that the fact that you have correlation functions which have three holomorphic Cs and three entelomorphic Cs, which are non-zero, are compatible with ghost number anomaly, with a current ghost number current anomaly. Remember that C has charge 1 under some current. It's pretty strange to have a correlation function of three charge 1 guys to be non-zero. But this happens because this current is anomalous. It has an anomaly. The total ghost number of a correlation function has to be proportional to the total curvature of the manifold. The sphere has curvature. If you integrate the curvature on the sphere with a proper normalization, you get 1. Another manifestation of that anomaly is that ghost number gets shifted as you go from the cylinder to the sphere. See, if you remember, this guy had dimension head goes number minus 1/2. This head goes number minus 3/2, but is mapped to an operator of goes number 0. This shift of 3/2 is precisely 3/2 that I sketchily wrote down on the blackboard when I was discussing the OPEs between the stress tensor and the goes number current. But anyway, so whenever you work on the sphere, you will always have nice correlation non-zero correlation functions, if and only if there are three more C's than B's. If you were to work on a space which is flat, like a torus, you would have to have the same number of C's and B's. If you're working on a space with negative curvature, you would have more B's than C's, always in groups of three. Okay. But we're going to just do three-level amplitudes for now. So anyway, so we have all the ingredients we'll need, which we'll need on Monday to do the calculations. Yes?
Can we make the connections with what we have this with the B minus 1, B bar, G over there, with what we said about not being a vacuum?
So this is... So Z0 is the state which has the correct properties to be the vacuum. This ground state is not the vacuum. The fact that the ground state is not the same as the vacuum is related to the fact that this theory is not unitary. It's also related to the fact that it has a field C of negative conformal dimension. C has dimension minus 1/2. Which is why the state associated to C goes below the vacuum by one unit. Okay. Okay. You already have enough ingredients on the board to do the simplest scattering amplitude in string theory. I'll do it on Monday, but I invite you to do it. So remember that the tachyon vertex operator is CC bar. Sorry, this tachyon state was supposed to be P tensor G, where P squared is 2. Right? Apply the state operator map. This becomes CC bar e to the I PX. So see if you can compute a scattering process where three tachyons involving three tachyons, like a tachyon decaying into two tachyons. Okay? This will require you to do a calculation with C, C bar, e to the I, px at z1, C, C bar, e to the I, px at z2, C, C bar, e to the I, px at z3. So I just took this picture, I mapped it to a sphere with three punctures and the corresponding operators. Here I had three states, and here I put the corresponding operators.
Do we have the same free momentum?
P1, P2, P3, okay. Sorry. That's right. See what you get. Okay.